Hello and welcome to the Organic Research Centre podcast. My name is Vicky Smith. The Organic Research Centre, or the ORC for short, is an independent research charity working for better and more sustainable farming systems which promote the environment and provide good food for everybody. This is one of many podcasts which we will be recording to help celebrate our 40th anniversary throughout 2021. Today I will be speaking to Rowan Dunbar-Pollard, who is ORC's Organic Business and Markets Researcher, as well as Andrew Trump, who is the Managing Director of Organic Arable. So, let's get started and learn a little bit more about Rowan and Andrew.
Rowan, you joined the ORC, you're still fairly new, aren't you? So you joined the ORC kind of the beginning of this year. Was it January that you started, I think, if my memory's right?
The middle of January. I applied for the role back in October and found out I got it, and I joined ORC just as the AgriMix project kicked off in January, basically.
Okay, fab. And then what's your job role at the ORC? What do you do day to day?
So yeah, largely I'm supporting my supervisor, Dr. Stefano Orsini. He's an agricultural economist, very experienced in all kinds of, you know, quantitative and qualitative research methods. He's leading a huge amount of projects at ORC and was really busy. So I came in to sort of lighten that load. So day to day, I could be doing anything from specific interviews with farmers as part of project work to editing reports to doing this today. So it's a very, very varied role.
And I guess you've managed to get out and about a bit more, have you, kind of recently? Have you been out in the field a bit more talking to farmers, or is it still quite home-based?
It's been a very strange year for me because I completed my master's at the end of last summer, and I then got and started this new job all from from inside my room. So it's been I've done a lot, but I haven't moved very far.
You mentioned that you did your master's, because I was going to ask what you did before being at the ORC. So you did a master's, did you?
My final dissertation at undergrad was all about the agricultural transition after Brexit and what the implications for Brexit were for kind of agroecology in the UK. And I found that so interesting that I wanted to do a master's sort of basically in the field of sustainability research more generally. So I did an MRes in sustainable futures, a master of research in sustainable futures at Bristol. And there was a lot of scope on that course to sort of focus on topics that I found interesting generally found I was focusing a lot on agriculture and supply chains and how to research those more effectively.
Okay, that's interesting. And then when we were speaking earlier, you mentioned the AgriMix project. Is that the main project that you're working on at the moment?
It's a very large four-year project, and it's looking into building sort of resilience in agroforestry and mixed farming systems in Europe. Stefano and I are leading on a task that's looking into potential opportunities for agroforestry and mixed farming, and that could be from a sort of farm level, you know, management perspective, or it could be further down the food supply chain.
And moving on to you, Andrew, then. So you work for Organic Arable. And how long have you been at Organic Arable?
We started operating independently in 2008. That was sort of, that's when we started operating as we are today. But prior to that, the business was set up in 1999 by a group of organic farmers. In a former life, I worked for Organic Research Centre, or Elm Farm Research Centre as it was at the time. So that takes me back to 2001, I think it was, that I started at Elm Farm Research Centre. And my interest in organics started in about 95, 96. So yeah, Rome was probably crawling around making me feel very old. Yeah, I converted a family farm down in Wiltshire, yeah, that's when I sort of started to engage with organics, and then through that ended up working, as I say, for Elm Farm.
Okay, interesting. And then do you want to tell us a little bit more about Organic Arable and what you do?
Yeah, so I mean, primarily we're a grain marketing business, but I think the big difference for us and the way that we operate is that we're a farmer run business. So the people that own the business are organic farmers. And so my remit in running the business is about doing more than simply making a profit for shareholders. So we don't actually look to make a large profit out of the business, and our shareholders have never taken any dividends. So what we're looking to do is to operate a profitable business so that we are financially sustainable, but at the same time to reinvest in the organic sector and to provide sort of service for our farmers. And I think that's sort of our USP compared with the sort of trading companies that are out there, because I suppose, you know, their interest is in making money. Our interest is in making enough money to survive, but not to make large sums of money that we would be taking out of the sector. And I think, you know, in the organic sector, it's so small. I mean, I know we work in it all the time, but it is actually, you know, in terms of the sort of scale of it, is tiny compared with you know, the wider economy. So I think it's important that we look to retain money within the sort of organic economy, as it were, and I think that's what we seek to do. So you know, we invest money, we pledge to OTB, we've helped to fund projects that English Organic Forum are doing, and I mean, just, yeah, so it's that sort of thing. I mean, we help fund the Living Mulch project that your colleague Dom runs. And it's that sort of thing. You know, if we've got money and we can reinvest it into the organic sector, then that's what we want to do, because that ultimately helps the sector develop and it helps our farmers.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. Maybe you could also quickly explain how the Organic Research Centre and Organic Arable have worked together in the past.
I think we've got a really good relationship with ORC, which is great, and particularly, I guess, with the crops team. So primarily with Dom and Ambro, I guess. But yeah, we have a good dialogue with them. I mean, we've been partners in a project called Live Wheat, and previous to that, a project called Live Seed. And they're sort of pretty much the same, but one, the Live Seed was EU-funded and Live Wheat is DEFRA-funded, but they're ostensibly the same project. And there have been a couple of other things that we've partnered with ORC over. And then, as I say, you know, then we sort of turn the table slightly. So with that, we're providing, with those projects, we're actually providing services to ORC and receive some funding for doing that. And then with the Living Mulch, as I say, we're investing some of our profits into that project to try and help that research and development, because although that's being run as an innovative farmers project, Dom sort of said we could really do more if we had a bit more time to do it. And that's great, you know, because it's not, we couldn't afford to fund a project in its entirety. That would be beyond our means. But if we can provide a bit of funding that provides a bit more resource for Dom to do some additional assessments and do some additional analysis so he can get more value out of the project that he's running, then that's brilliant, because that's sort of, as I say, helping with that development. And yeah, I mean, I would love to be able to fund huge, great, you know, research projects. And if we were marketing all the organic grain in the country, then we'd be in a position to be able to do that, but we're not. So yeah, you know, I suppose that's a plea to farmers to work through us rather than working through other people, and a plea to our customers to sort of buy more through us so that we have a, you know, we have that resource to be able to do more development. But we have to be realistic and work within the means that we've got available to us. So, yeah.
I think it's important to highlight here what a sort of forward thinking relationship that it is, because with organic arable, obviously they see research as a very important part of sustaining business development and you know, sort of future income security. And then obviously at ORC, it's incredibly important for us to have that direct link with farmers and with people working in the supply chain as well. So our research is incredibly relevant too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've always sort of engaged or sought to engage in research work. I mean, the other thing I forgot to say, of course, which is very fundamental, is that Elm Farm Research Centre, as was, helped was part of the original shareholders. Lucy is a director, and you know, ORC helped to set us up in the first place. So you know, we have them to thank for where we are today as well. You know, which I should have said, because that's the sort of fundamental reason that we're here. And I talked about more recent stuff, but yeah, you know, that's important. Those links are really important, I think.
So I've got a couple of questions for both of you that I thought we could discuss between us during this podcast. And the first one is, how do we create a fairer food supply chain? Quite a big question, but will lead to some good discussion, I hope. Rowan, I don't know whether you want to go first.
Quite interested to hear what Andrew's take on this is, especially his you know, experience of the arable sector. And I was just wondering, you know, what sort of your thoughts were on maybe the kind of typical experience of maybe a new grower or a small, maybe a smaller scale producer in the arable sector, and maybe the challenges they might face at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, there's some, I mean, I think there's some really interesting things happening in at the moment. There's a bit of a divergence happening. For me, for the organic sector, what I want to see the organic sector do is really have an impact on changing our food system in this country. Now, that's partly what we need to achieve. We want to be using that additional money that I believe the consumer is prepared to pay to finance farmers to deliver public goods, not necessarily to spend more on processing. So I think that there's a conflict and we're working it out at the moment. And that's really exciting because different people are doing different things. But yeah, I think that's sort of a challenge that we face at the moment, is finding the appropriate scale, because we don't want to be, you know, we know that the kind of supermarket model doesn't really fit, but I'm not sure that we're going to have a model whereby every village has its own windmill either, because I'm not sure that would work either. So we've got to work out how best we sit between those two things, and that's really interesting. And you know, it's great you've got people like Rowan coming along who, you know, academic, they've got that kind of approach to things, they're economists, and they can, you know, they can work on these problems in a way that I can't, because I don't have that ability or capacity. So you know, it's great, it's great.
So would you say that the key to sort of targeting sort of the appropriate scale at which the sector should be operating at, is that through kind of collective organising, like you do at Organic Arable?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I would always suggest that's positive. Where you don't want to get to is a situation. You simply have farmers all processing on farm and then competing one with another with a finished product rather than a raw material, because I'm not sure that would necessarily benefit people. And I think, you know, the other thing we have to accept is that most farmers aren't marketeers. And, you know, there are some farmers that are, and they do a great job. You know, but the vast majority of farmers aren't in that position, and that's either they don't have the inclination, they don't have the skills, you know, they possibly don't want to invest the capital or don't have the capital available to them to develop that element of their business. So I think there's absolutely a need for farmers to act together, you know, and again, do farmers want to invest off the farm? Some will and some won't. I mean, to me, it's about probably developing partnerships through the supply chain, but I guess it's about then how you deliver risk and reward through that supply chain as well, because, you know, the sort of model that we've tended to have is that most of the reward is sort of leaving the farm. So I think farmers would say that they take more risk in terms of production and get less of the reward than they should do. I'm sure if you had retailers on, they would sort of characterize it slightly differently. But I think we need to understand how we allocate that, you know, the money generated through the value chain better, because it doesn't seem at the moment that it's particularly fairly allocated. And I think the way that farmers can do that is through having more sort of a more collective approach to what they do. I'm not sure that necessarily means that they have to invest in processing. You know, I think with organics, you know, we have this concept coming out of IFOAM of organic 2.0, which is looking far more at sort of you know, equitability within the supply chain, looking at social issues around organic production. And I think that's, you know, where we're headed over the next sort of 20 years. So yeah, these things are going to be interesting in how they develop. But I think where we are at the moment, we talk about supply chains, and that's very, you know, we all know what a chain looks like, and you have a number of links in the chain, and that's why we talk about supply chains, because you tend to have a raw material that moves to a processor, that moves to a secondary processor, that moves to a retailer. And that can be, you know, that chain can vary in length. And it's obvious why you have that, because different people within that supply chain have different skills, and they put them together and they come up with a product that the customer wants to buy. But I think where we are today is that, you know, we have this incredible ability to move knowledge around in a way that we haven't had previously. So, you know, social media, the internet, however you want to characterize that, we have this incredibly dynamic information flow. And I think where we are at the moment is so the information tends to flow along the supply chain. So, you know, it's quite difficult for somebody picking up a product on a supermarket shelf or on a farm shop shelf to really know where that product has come from and who has been involved in its production and how they feel about that supply chain. And I think we can challenge that. So I think, you know, whilst physical product needs to move in a sort of linear way, actually information and knowledge doesn't. So there's no reason why the consumer shouldn't understand what the producer is doing, shouldn't understand what the processor has done as part of that. And so that knowledge needn't flow in that linear manner, and we can free it up. Now, I mean, we're starting to see some of that happen. But I think it's about, again, we need to have transparency around that, because at the moment I would suggest that brands and retailers are the gatekeepers to a lot of that information. So they hold the information about the supply chain and they release information to the consumer that they want to release, that supports their product, supports their brand. And I think what you don't want to do is kind of create an alternative gateholder to that information. You need to have transparency about the information flow. So that may be a challenge. I think actually creating the network of information would be easy. It's then who actually kind of owns that and what they do with it. And I think that's where farmers need to be cute in terms of, and really, really understand the value of that information and how they can use that. And not give it away too easily. So they need to share it in order for consumers to value it, but they also need to ensure that they retain the value of it as part of the product that they're producing. So I think that's key. And also I would say transparency is key, so that people actually know what is going on in supply chains. And I didn't mention it earlier, but I will do. We charge a marketing fee. So we charge a commission. We don't make a margin on what we do. We charge a fee. So both our customers and our farmers know what we're making out of the business. So we believe that that transparency and transaction charge is important because it allows better communication through the supply chain.
I was actually about to make that plug for you, Andrew. No, I think that's a really, really important thing that our organic arable do in that it does bring that longer term security to the supply chain. And that's maybe something that organic producers, organic growers haven't benefited from in the past. And obviously the longer that there is stability in a supply chain, the more possible it is for ideas and different innovations to get a better foothold.
And then what about the market opportunities, Andrew, in the organic sector?
I think there are definitely market opportunities out there, and I think particularly, you know, over the next little while, and I'd hate to put a time scale on that, but I guess sort of, you know, 3-5 years, we are going to start to see supply chains have to change. You know, we're facing two things. We're facing, you know, biodiversity, a climate crisis, and I think for businesses to achieve themselves, they're going to have to look very, very seriously at their supply chains. And that will provide opportunities because we're going to need more domestically produced organic grain. I think consumers will want to know that the products that they're buying, what the provenance of those is, what the carbon cost of those is, the biodiversity that those products are helping to support. That's what I love about organics, is actually it's just a really, really market focused way of delivering what consumers want, which is, or a lot of consumers want, is better quality food that delivers, you know, in terms of carbon sequestration, delivers in terms of biodiversity benefits.
Obviously the organic sector has seen a huge boost in the last year or so. I think it's increased by about 10%. And more importantly, it's also across all sectors beating non-organic growth by about 3%. I was just wondering if Andrew had any maybe insights into the arable, organic arable sector, and what maybe the key is to sort of, you know, capitalising on those growths.
Yes, so I mean, it's interesting because we're seeing this sort of growth in, you know, two comments I'd make. One is, you know, in terms of the value of sale, that thing, I'd also love to see the reporting that there was on volume of sales as well, because value of sales, you know, yeah, has a litre of milk gone up by 5p? And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, because if the dairy farmers, you know, get an extra 5p, then, or part of that 5p, then that's a positive. But actually, you know, has the volume of sale gone up as well? And I think it would be great to see some reporting on that, because that's important, particularly for producers to know how volume sales are against just value sales. We always assume that value sales mean that volumes have gone up, but doesn't have to be the case. And also, obviously, from the arable sector, there's so much imported grain that comes into the country. You know, it would be great to see more focus on, you know, people actually prioritising to use domestic grain. You know, we've had this situation this year where feed barley has been incredibly difficult to sell in the conventional market, because the feed wheat was much higher than the price of feed barley, then the feed manufacturers have bought more barley, and that didn't happen in the organic sector, which is really disappointing. And so we've still got barley left on farm that, you know, isn't sold. And, you know, so you do get these kind of market failures that happen. And I think that's to do with the scale, but also to do with, you know, the volume of imports that are available in the marketplace. So, yeah, there, you know, as I said, there will be opportunities. I think these things are going to turn round, but it's a question of, as ever, it's timing with these things. You know, it will change. But at the moment, I would say that probably arable farmers aren't really feeling that that sort of 10% growth in sales that's been reported has particularly benefited them this season.
Thanks, Brad. That was a really, really interesting and useful discussion. Rowan, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think we're entering a really interesting period for sort of social scientific research, and you know, there's a lot of progress made in the different sort of methodologies you can use to capture these quite, you know, complex topics. But there's also a lot of work still to be done in terms of capturing those subjects. Some of the other project work I've been doing, it has been looking at how you maybe incorporate these sort of wider sort of societal factors into impact assessments, and the kind of metrics and calculations you need to do for that. You know, different ways that you can adapt, for example, the PG tool that we use at ORC to take on board those sort of wider factors.
Mm-hmm. That brings us to the end of the podcast. Thanks to both to Rowan and Andrew for being involved. If you would like to find out more about the ORC, whether that be our research, knowledge exchange or policy activity, please visit our website. I have included a link in the podcast introductory information to our homepage. You can also follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook or LinkedIn, as well as signing up to our bulletin or e-bulletin via the contact part of our website. Please also keep checking our 40th anniversary webpage for latest celebratory content, including podcasts, webinars and research fact sheets, which will look back on some of our most pioneering research over the last 40 years.